from deep inside your radio.
Well, back at the original and unduplicated, inimitable, unduplicable Le Show Dome, ladies and gentlemen. Back from Las Vegas, whence this show originated last week, where the main thing on my mind, you know, I don't like to talk about myself and my own experiences all that much, but the main thing on my mind, basically in the 30 minutes leading up to the broadcast, and therefore in the 15 that followed coming down from it, was, will the driver ever find the place? But here we are. I found the place because I am the driver. And that's a start. The grown-ups, ladies and gentlemen, back to this subject for just a moment. We were adjured when the Bush administration took office that the grown-ups are in charge, you see. All the falderall, the foolishness and worse of the Clinton era being brought back to mind, of course, to us this week with the release of Hillary's book. Just imagine what it's going to be like when Bill's book comes out a year from September. Man, try to get some oxygen for the presidential campaign then. Anyway, to replace all that, the grown-ups were taking over. Here's how the grown-ups are behaving this week. The 45th Paris Air Show kicked off yesterday, Saturday, without the presence of a single top executive from a leading U.S. defense contractor. Oh, Lockheed Martin, the world's top arms maker, confirmed that its chairman and chief executive, Vance Kaufman, had pulled out of the show, citing scheduling conflicts. Kaufman had been the only CEO of a top U.S. aerospace or defense firm planning to attend the show, which is the world's leading gathering for aerospace executives, military brass, and flying fans. Show takes place in Paris, hence the name, Paris Air Show. Lingering U.S. resentment over France's staunch opposition to the war in Iraq had led the Defense Department to scale back sharply on its participation and, according to Washington insiders, put pressure on U.S. companies not to attend. It's the grown-ups. That's the way the grown-ups behave, you see. Not being petulant or childish, just pulling out. Pulling out prematurely. That's what grown-ups do. Does this mean that we won't be the arms dealer to the world anymore? I don't know. It means some more of those Airbuses will be fitted for cargo and bombs? I don't know that either, ladies and gentlemen. The Russians are still in the business, aren't they? And on a brighter note, this broadcast originates from Southern California, whence Los Angeles this week officially became the world's first city to have its own internet domain. Come on. Come on. That's good. That's a good thing. Approved by the Internet Corporation for Assignment Names and Numbers, the .la domain offers the same functionality as .com. In the month since its launch, it had a soft launch. Aw. Nearly 10,000 names with .la have been pre-registered, including Yahoo.la, Rolex.la, Madonna.la. Yeah, she's really an L.A. person. And Arnold Schwarzenegger's Arnie.la. He at least lives here. I don't know. Does Madonna live anywhere? She lives in the stratosphere, something like that. It's a corporation, L.A. Names Corporation in Guernsey, U.K., operates the .la domain, along with Dublin, Ireland-based domain name registrar Affilius Limited. The actual L.A. representation is by a company called DreamHost. Well, that's more an L.A. name than the others. But, yeah, you got to go to U.K. and Ireland to get .la. Globalization. Ain't it great? Hello, welcome to the show. Yeah, we're back home. And it feels so good. From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to the show, observing that .LA, I guess, is about as close as Madonna's going to get to the Oscars. What about Madonna.ACT? Just, you know, in case somebody believed it. How about this, though, ladies and gentlemen? Let me propose something to you. How about we all just make this mental switch just to focus ourselves a little bit. Let's just pretend, shall we, that when someone says weapons of mass destruction, when you hear that, what they're really saying is semen stain on a blue dress. And then the question of whether it exists becomes much more interesting, doesn't it? Then we focus again. Because you see, when President George W. Bush was visiting Poland, and you know, you got to excuse the guy, he was in Poland. Still, he said, this was a couple of weeks ago, week and a half ago, he said, we found the weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, pointing to the two trailers, which U.S. officials had said were mobile bioweapons labs, as outlined by Colin Powell in his U.N. speech in February. The same one where he quoted the, I'm not going to bother with that. Dateline London, an official British investigation into the two trailers found in northern Iraq has concluded they are not mobile germ warfare labs, but were for the production of hydrogen to fill artillery balloons, as the Iraqis insisted all along. That's right, they were full of hydrogen. The conclusion by biological weapons experts working for the British government is an embarrassment for the Prime Minister, says the Observer of London. Not to mention certain other chief executives of certain Western nations. A British scientist and biological weapons expert who examined the trailers in Iraq told the British newspaper The Observer, quote, they are not mobile germ warfare laboratories. You could not use them for making biological weapons. They do not even look like them. They are exactly what the Iraqis said they were, facilities for the production of hydrogen gas to fill balloons, unquote. Balloons, ladies and gentlemen. They were labs for balloons. That could be the basis for a whole new hydrogen economy. Forget the balloons, just gas up your car. Ed Begley Jr. is there now trying to fill up his car just from those mobile hydrogen trucks. That could help. That could all help. Anyway, as I say, when people bring that up, you know, just in your own mind, substitute semen stain on a blue dress, and immediately you begin to care whether it exists or not, I think. Maybe, maybe not. Something serious, ladies and gentlemen, not only with France. By the way, France, okay, you may know this, you may not know this. It certainly hasn't been brought to our attention generally in this country. The perfidious French, you know, the French who don't like to get their hands dirty in places like Iraq, helping us out with our war. 3 million people have been massacred in the Congo in the last few years in a spate of bloody civil wars, massacres, what you wills. The United Nations Security Council, remember them, has just dispatched a peacekeeping unit, an armed peacekeeping force to Congo to try to quell the massacres. Chief contributor of men to that force. Now, that's a place where your chances of coming out unscathed are pretty dodgy. Chief contributor to that force at the moment. What's this? The French? The perfidious French? Contributing no forces so far to the UN Security Council peacekeeping force in the Congo. The United States of America. We got our hands full, ladies and gentlemen. But anyway, so it's not only France that we got trouble with. Canada. Now, I have to say, I've been waging my own private little thing with Canada, just because the French can't send guys here to take over our jobs or to make our movies shoot there. That's all Canada's doing. Although the Canadian dollar this week hit a 7-year high, 75 cents. So maybe it won't be as cheap to film in Canada Let's root for the Canadian dollar, the loonie. True. True story. Anyway, Heidi Fleiss has been denied admission to Canada for the second time in less than a month. Are our madams not good for that? Good enough for them? The hell it... Oh, yeah, sure. You've got your own madams, Canada. Yeah, your own Canadian culture madams. Fleiss was to have been in Toronto this week to promote her recently published memoirs. Pandering is the title. And to appear on the television program, Because I Said So. Is that a great name for a Canadian broadcast or what? Because I Said So, featuring Graham McNamara. However, early this week, she received a fax at her home in California. Now, you know this report comes from a non-American, or at least a non-West Coast news source. Her home in California. California is, as we now know, a state the size of the nation of Iraq. But she has a home all over it. They've probably incorporated cities in California by now that have names. Anyway, she received a fax at her home from the Canadian consulate in Los Angeles. Ah, I see, the consulate has a home, saying her request for a special visa had been denied. She needs a visa because she's a convicted felon. She spent 3 years in jail for tax evasion and money laundering. She attempted to enter Canada last month to make an infomercial in Vancouver for Vigorex, sometimes described as herbal Viagra, with porn movie star Ron Jeremy. We need more Ron Jeremy infomercials. That's just a personal thing, but having seen one, I am now insatiable. She was turned back then because she had failed to apply for the visa, and her visit was deemed to have, quote, an immoral purpose, unquote. So in the minds of the Canadian government, Heidi Fleiss and Ron Jeremy selling herbal Viagra is immoral. A spokeswoman with Ms. Fleiss's Canadian publisher said, it's too bad this has happened. She's so fun. I can't understand why they're doing this now. This is still the quote from the Canadian publisher spokeswoman. Here are all these people saying they're not coming to Toronto because of SARS, and here was this person who was happy to come. Unquote. The producers of Because I Said So also touted the positive aspect of her trip. Quote, her coming makes a statement that Toronto is a safe place to visit, the letter said. In vain. Oh, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, appended to the previous item about the Iraqi weapons, bioweapons trailers turned hydrogen trailers, the Iraqi Army's original system, the trailers, the whole system that was being used, filling artillery balloons with hydrogen thing, was sold to Iraq by the British company Marconi Command and Control. We're so globalized now. Except for Heidi Fleiss not being able to get into Canada, it's a global kind of thing, a global village. And on the other hand, in today's Washington Post, soon after George W. Bush took office in January 2001, his advisors began drafting a strategy for dealing with Iran, a radical Islamic state long suspected of supporting international terrorism and pursuing weapons of mass destruction. More than 2 years later, says the Washington Post, the National Security Presidential Directive on Iran has gone through several competing drafts and is yet to be approved by Bush's senior advisors. Now, that's putting it a little gently. This morning on Fox TV, Senator Richard Lugar of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee put it a little more plainly.
I would admit the administration's policy on Iran, in my judgment, has not yet been formulated. I want to leave some running room for that formulation to occur.
That's what the grown-ups do. They spend 2 years not having formulated a policy on Iran yet. Because, you see, they haven't been weakened by 12 years of inspection. So you don't want to pick... You want to be careful about picking on a country like that. A country that actually might have an intact armed force. Ladies and gentlemen. News of the media. Filmmaker Spike Lee won a preliminary injunction this week that blocks the mighty Viacom from changing the name of TNN cable network. Now, TNN, of course, was originally called the Nashville Network, Then when Viacom bought it, they changed the name to TNN, hoping that it sounded like something else. But nobody knew what that something else was, so they were going to change it on this Monday to Spike TV. But Spike Lee sued and won a preliminary injunction. Manhattan State Supreme Court Justice Walter Tolib granted Lee's request, but ordered him to post a $500,000 bond to cover Viacom's costs in case the studio prevails. Viacom announced the name change in April in an effort to attract more young male viewers to the heavily male-skewing cable network. If it's already heavily male-skewing, why do they need to... The top-rated show is World Wrestling Entertainment's Raw. New programs in store for the once-named Spike TV include A Guy and His Stuff, Stan Lee's Stripperella, featuring the voice of Pamela Anderson as a stripper superhero. Why didn't I think of that? And The Return of Ren and Stimpy. In addition to the name Spike, there are other indicia, said the judge. The defendants sought to exploit Mr. Lee's persona, most notably Mr. Lee's reputation for irreverence and aggressiveness. Lee says he does not want his name associated with the channel because it will feature lowbrow programs. Lee must prove that his name is sufficiently well known that it has acquired the status of a trademark, says the judge. There is a daily column in a Sydney, Australia newspaper called Spike, if Mr. Lee wants to sue down under. But, you know, Harry TV is available, folks at Viacom. You know, and I'm kind of aggressive and irreverent. I'll make a deal with you. You know, it's not free, but we could talk, you know, call me at the station. And other media news. Jane Pauley had barely signed off Dateline NBC, said her final farewell, when NBC announced that Pauley is returning to do a daytime talk show for NBC. The farewell tour lasted 36 minutes. The Jane Pauley Show will debut next fall. When I decided to leave NBC News and Dateline NBC, said Pauley, I honestly did not know where the road would take me. It took me around the corner in 30 Rock to the office. Slightly smaller. Maybe not, though. Maybe it's just equally as big. Because she is still Jane Pauley. Now, ladies and gentlemen, speaking of media, let me read the trades for you. This is from Current, thanks to assistance from our Pittsburgh desk in providing issues of Current, the newspaper about public television and radio. It's inside this very thing. I'll read, upgrade wanted for digital radio sound quality. Yes, I will read it for you. Worries about sound quality have delayed radio's move to digital transmission and caused concern about secondary audio channels, digital's strongest selling point among public broadcasters. Why, could you think they could sell the secondary signals for... it's just me. It's just me wondering. Last month, the Digital Subcommittee of the National Radio Systems Committee postponed recommending a digital audio standard until encoding problems are resolved. Ubiquiti Digital Corporation, the company involved, promised FM broadcasts that sounded as good as a compact disc, yuck, and AM broadcasts that sound like today's FM. Well, why not? If you want something that sounds like today's FM, why don't you listen to today's FM? The committee declared the tests at the lower bit rate used to encode AM were unsuitable for broadcasts. Digital artifacts on the AM tests gave it a swirly, watery sound, say broadcasters who heard them.
What's wrong with that?
Broadcasters had heard similar warnings at January's Consumer Electronics Show and at the National Association of Broadcasters convention in April. More troubling for public broadcasters are questions raised about the quality of secondary audio channels. Digital radio promises the ability to send two channels over one frequency, giving public broadcasters the tantalizing chance to add a complementary program format to their service. Not sell it off for private, like public television is good. Really? But others now wonder if untested bit rates could sound as murky as the AM tests. Faulty encoding would also hinder data casting. Ah, there we go. An advance that appeals both to public and commercial broadcasters. NPR is experimenting with secondary audio under the name Tomorrow Radio. Ubiquity's problems center on the software used for encoding and decoding audio. Using a technology developed by Lucent. Hey, didn't they go bankrupt? Yes, they did. But it's also a parent company of Ubiquity. Ubiquity saved money on patent licensing this way. Skip Peetze, a Microsoft technologist and frequent critic of the digital audio rollout, hey Skip, said he understands the financial realities, but it's difficult to see business drive a decision in a way that's obviously counter to technical judgments. An Ubiquity spokesman said the decision was more about strategy than money. Digital Wonderland just keeps getting better, ladies and gentlemen. As I read the trades for you, copyrighted feature, we'll find those WMDs our own way, a much more effective way, moments from now, here on Le Show.
This summer, KISS 109 is more than hotties, hunks, and hits. We're throwing down the biggest treasure hunt since Christie found the matches on Survivor Thailand. And all you need to win is a phone and a map. Okay, Katie, you ready?
Yeah.
All right, here's your clue. I've got a secret. I may be in Tikrit. Each morning on the Stiffy and Lynn Fun Bunch featuring Weezer, you'll get another clue to the location of the $50 million
WND stash.
Be the first to find it, and here's what you win. A television contract to appear on the Today Show, Total Request Live, and This Week with George Stephanopoulos. A 2004 Hummer Supreme.
Plus,
an official presidential credibility enhancer windbreaker from your friends at Clear Channel.
Is it the outskirts of Umkasar?
Hey, good guess, babe. For a retard. But you can't win it unless you're in it. Call the KISS 109 Weapons of Mass D-Line now for your chance to find the $50 million
WMD stash.
From the official home of hotties, hunks, and hits.
KISS 109, where you can always
kiss this.
Streets are not much cleaner, and the quaint old South Side scenery is quaint no more. Just older than before. Go up the stairs and down the hallway to my daddy's door. Your son is home, Dad, and he's found a girl. Well, she's the greatest girl in all the world. I think you like her, Dad, I hope you do. But if you don't, that's all right, too. What's new? Do you still work at the drugstore? Is that true? Still polishing the same floor? I miss my good old dad. My, but I'm glad to see you home again. No, I won't be staying here, Dad. Come and see us, Papa, when you can. There'll always be a place for my old man. Just drop by when it's convenient to. Be sure and call before you do.
So long, Dad. So long, Dad. So long, Dad. So long, Dad.
Actually, I need more current voice. Forget the one that's saying more first.
Now, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
It's an exclusive feature of this broadcast, and there are so many apologies this week. Hey, I even got one, but we're not going to talk about that. I don't bring my personal business to the program. Dateline Toronto, again, a Toronto car dealership took out a full-page ad this week in a city newspaper to apologize for a newspaper ad that said SARS was just a rash and that the fever would go away if city residents cashed in on its sale on cars and vans. Quote, "We did not and do not ever intend to offend anybody with our advertisement," stated the apology published by T.I. Herdman, president of Trillium Pontiac Buick in Scarborough. "To anyone who has been inflicted with this disease or been quarantined, we would like to extend a special apology. The rest of the community cannot appreciate the effect that SARS has had on your lives." The apology said the dealership had received calls of complaint. In telling people SARS was just a rash, the ad purported to cite as the source the World Health Organization and the Centers of Disease Control. The ad cost probably more than $10,000. Canadian. Paid apology similar in size to the one published this week would cost about $9,000. Canadian. They didn't offer people who've been quarantined 0% interest on a new van, though. Chicago Tribune. Last Sunday, wrote this. Editors at the Tribune approved a political cartoon about the Middle East that appeared on this editorial page. The cartoon's imagery was viewed by many readers as virulently anti-Semitic. That was a valid response. Pulitzer Prize-winning cartoonist Richard Locker intended no slight, no slur in his cartoon portraying Ariel Sharon, Yasser Arafat, and President Bush. He intended a commentary on the role of U.S. foreign aid. The editors who selected it saw nothing more than that in the cartoon. "We failed to recognize that the cartoon conveyed symbols and stereotypes that slur the Jewish people and that are offensive. The editors of this newspaper regret publishing the cartoon." Courtney Love apologized to her ex-boyfriend Ed Norton and his current girlfriend Selma Hayek. She told Vanity Fair that Norton will never marry her. He can barely understand half of what she's saying. A new document has revealed that Japan's wartime emperor Hirohito may have been planning to apologize and take responsibility for Japan's imperialist march across East Asia. In a 1948 draft speech written in the hand of his top aide, Hirohito tells his subjects of his mental agony over Japan's war losses and the flame of anxiety that burns my body. The draft is an apology to the Japanese people, not to the countries that Japan occupied. After Japan surrendered, Hirohito, in fact, did not take any responsibility for the war. He was protected by the United States, his image remade, and kept on the throne as part of the U.S. strategy to rebuild Japan. The new document discovered by the writer Kyoko Kato and published by the magazine Bungen Shunju indicates the emperor privately accepted his central war role. U.S. made him not apologize. In an emotional ceremony of reconciliation and hope, leaders of the regional United Methodist Church in Ohio apologized this week to Native Americans and to God for the savagery with which their ancestors treated Indian tribes, says Bishop Bruce Ouch. How would you pronounce that? Ow. Head of the West Ohio Conference of the United Methodist Church. "Lord, we confess that we enjoy a prosperity and a civilization that are built upon the lands, the civilizations, and the blood of others." The Reverend Fred Shaw, United Methodist minister and a Shawnee Indian from suburban Cincinnati, also apologized on behalf of Native Americans. "God of forgiveness, we confess the blood that we have spilled in the madness of war," said Mr. Shaw, whose tribal name is Nyaik. "That anger still wells up within us, so we seek villains to hate rather than partners for creating a new world of peace." That's nice. In Australia, Channel 10 and the producer Big Brother is still a big show in Australia. That's all you need to know. Channel 10 and the producers of Big Brother apologized for airing a racist comment on the reality TV show after being threatened with possible legal action by the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Commission. Host Gretel Colleen opened this week's nomination episode with an apology, saying the comment was offensive to both women and people of Aboriginal descent. The offensive comments were made in a racist joke, which was told by a new entrant to the Big Brother house. Big Brother producers refused to counsel Kim, a 21-year-old hairdresser, because they said she hadn't broken house rules. Okay. I don't know what the joke was. I'm not going to repeat it. Red Book magazine admits that they took Julia Roberts' head from one photograph and attached it to a picture of her body from 4 years earlier. A Hearst corporate spokeswoman says, "In an effort to make a cover that would pop on the newsstand, we combined two different shots of Julia Roberts. We acknowledge that we may have gone too far and hope Miss Roberts will accept our apology." Too much pop. It's a long pop. The general manager and president of the Cheshire Inn in St. Louis, Missouri, has resigned and apologized following accusations of racism for refusing to allow two men in dreadlocks to enter the establishment. Company officials said they would not ban patrons because of dreadlocks and would require their 40 employees to undergo sensitivity training to prevent similar charged events in the future. The apologies followed a meeting with two activists who had threatened to picket the facility on Father's Day. I wish to apologize to the two gentlemen that were denied entry to the bar on May 17th and to anyone offended by my uninformed and inappropriate remarks regarding the incident that occurred at the Cheshire Inn, Jack Luders said. I sincerely hope that my apology will be accepted and will help heal the wounds I have caused in the community. He resigned from the hotel. A well-known New York publishing company has settled a simmering dispute with Las Vegas Mayor Oscar Goodman over a book that alleged he attended a coffee shop meeting in which the assassination of a federal judge was plotted. Farrar, Strauss, and Giroux apologized to Goodman for the passage in Positively Fifth Street, a recent book about high-stakes poker and a high-profile murder trial. There's the publisher's apology letter says, "We hope that no reader misunderstands the passage to constitute an assertion of fact about Mayor Goodman." Goodman says the story was made up. You don't want the mayor of Las Vegas mad at you, ladies and gentlemen. The Frenchman who misidentified a South Florida woman as his ex-wife said he believes he made a mistake and is sorry. Pierre Fourcade was convinced that Nona Kaysen of Sunrise, Florida, was really Nadine Tretyakov, a woman charged with kidnapping her own two children away from Fourcade. She wasn't, but she was arrested at gunpoint May 16th, spent 6 nights in jail, and sat helpless as her children were put into state custody. The U.S. Attorney's Office dismissed charges after DNA tests showed the kids weren't related by blood to Pierre Fourcade. They were reunited with their mom last week. "I understand it was a terrible shock for her," Fourcade said from his home in France. "I was wrong. Of course I'm sorry." He misidentified his ex-wife, ladies and gentlemen. That's what he's sorry for. And NBC is involved in an apology. Rob Campos, the hunky bachelor star of NBC's new series For Love or Money, has been revealed as not a member of the Judge Advocate General's office in the Navy. His military career was derailed after he drunkenly groped a female Navy officer, according to thesmokinggun.com. NBC said it does not intend to pull the show because at this point NBC and the producer have completed production, and the actions of the participants were carefully monitored throughout the production, unlike Big Brother. While in the military judge training program, an inebriated Campos knocked on the door of a female officer one night and after being let in, allegedly began groping her. She kneed him in the groin. He collapsed. She fled the room. He was expelled from the program and ordered to undergo substance abuse treatments. NBC acknowledged this would have been material information during the screening process. The information was not turned up by the private investigator hired to check out show participants. Campos, gentleman in question, issued a statement saying he has apologized to NBC and the producer for not informing them about the incident. Apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, copyrighted feature. You may have seen the photographs of President Bush and his father, the first President Bush, at Kennebunkport, trying out the Segway scooter this week. But basically they're spending their time this weekend at the family retreat on the golf course and having good conversation.
All right, 43. It's a little more like it.
Hey, sir, I don't need a mentor out here. I need a competitor.
Well, then, glad to oblige. Curving a little to the right.
I know the feeling. So look, 43, all I'm saying is, you know, caution is for losers. We won. We push ahead. Let the French and the Russians and the Democrats be cautious. You know, on them it looks good.
Just don't want to see you get hurt. Oh. You know, might have waited a couple more months before declaring victory. You know, until the troops stop getting killed.
Hey. We were behind schedule as it was. You know, Dr. Rove wanted me back on the fundraising circuit long before this.
Yeah.
Ernie Els couldn't have done it better.
Ernie Els wouldn't have needed to do it.
You know, I don't judge a man by how he gets into a jam. I judge him by how he gets out of it.
Mm-hmm. And the way out of this one is?
Is to take a swing.
Mean out of your jam over there.
Sure. Yeah. Excuse me. We have rid the world of a sadistic tyrant.
Great. Only 150 to go.
We got the Israelites talking to our chosen Palestinians.
Yeah, but that just got the hotheads fired up again.
Oh, please, 43. You know, I've trotted around the bases a few times now.
Yeah.
No one knows better than me how much the terrorists dislike the chance of peace. I mean, they hate it almost as much as they hate freedom and the market and baseball itself. But we're standing so strong over there right now. Just like Dick and his people said, it's like they have the gift of prophecy or tongues or something. But, you know, we're so strong that for once, our Arab friends are acting like our Arab friends.
Oh, that's real close.
Your support is always welcome.
Thanks. Well, what does Condi say?
What does your putter say?
You don't think part of the reason the uprising rose up again is because our Arab friends are supporting it via the back door?
That's not what my intelligence briefings are telling me.
Yeah, which ones? The real ones or the stuff that Rumsfeld's peddling? Hey, we keeping score?
Sorry.
You don't think a sophisticated player like Jim Baker is what you need over there right now, giving you the benefit of this?
No, I don't. Every time I see the man, he keeps giving me that "you owe me for Florida" wink.
Well.
Oh, sure. Now, look here, back to the intelligence deal. Yeah. I'm not crying over split milk or anything, but the only reason we needed to produce a weapons threat in the first place is because of Colin.
Yeah. Colin is a fine man.
He hadn't talked us into that excellent UN adventure. We wouldn't have needed weapons intelligence to convince Congo and Bongo and Wongo Wongo to vote with us. And we could have had the war fought and won on the original schedule. And I could have made my landing on the USS Abraham Lincoln on Super Bowl Sunday.
Didn't know that was the plan.
Yeah, Dr. Rove even got them to extend the length of halftime ticket.
Hey, Sprout. Hmm? Not saying you're not sitting on top of the world. Just saying you remember another President Bush was there once. Didn't last long.
Couple little differences. Mm-hmm. I removed Hussein, and I cut taxes. Aside from that, you know. See, 4-1, I know it bothers you that I learned from your mistakes. And so I see your policy advice to me through that schism.
No, not bothered. Proud. Just want to make sure you learn the most important lesson.
Yeah. Which one is that?
Don't bet against the old man on the back nine.
No, really.
Just not to get out on limbs that you can't look good climbing down from. You know, if the Dems ever make a dent in you.
Hey, 43, just exactly how they gonna do that? You know, I mean, I've been chosen for this moment. They haven't. In the story.
Right. Good point.
Thank you.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, it's not a question. It's a statement of fact. That is going to conclude this edition of Le Show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, on the USEN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the giant shortwave voice of WBCQ The Planet, 7.415 megahertz, across North America on Sirius satellite radio, and on your computer around the world via the internet whenever you want it at two different locations, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com. And it would be just like the grown-ups devising an Iran policy if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you? Alrighty, thank you very much. Email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. The show internet services by Steve Mack. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of SAS, a satellite service of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.